Welcome to the Painting Lines Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture, and from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready? Play.
Welcome back to Painting Lines. Last week we talked about Rublev winning the Monte Carlo Masters, and this week we're going to be talking about four players that are kind of in a downward trajectory in their career and why we think that is. So kind of giving a backdrop for this, after living in like an era where the big three had this sort of impossible longevity and they were great for so long, it kind of seems like there's a little bit of reality setting in with some of these younger players. Not everybody can stay at the top as long as the big three did because they were such an anomaly. There's really four that came to mind for us. So we're going to start with Denis Shapovalov and why we think he's sort of on that downward trajectory for his career.
Yeah, definitely. This is a pretty interesting topic too, just because I feel like not a lot of people talk about players that have peaked. It's kind of a weird thing to talk about, right? Usually you talk about players who are on the upward trajectory and ones that are, you know, maybe peaking like we've done in the past. So I do like this topic. It kind of switches things up. And starting things off with Denis Shapovalov, I used to love this guy. You know, I remember being in college, watching his highlights. 2019, he, you know, had his breakout year, won his first title, age of 20, in Stockholm, which he was playing Tommy Paul in 2020, where Tommy Paul beat him there. So it's pretty interesting that he couldn't hold this title. But yeah, and then he defeated Nadal back in 2017 at the Canadian Open. So, you know, watching this guy then, you think, all right, he's going to be the next best thing. He's on his way. He's going to be a top player, probably top, you know, Canadian player. But then 2020 reached his career high ranking of number 10, and we have not seen him since. I think that's partially because of just like his wild play style, you know? He's a loose cannon. Watching him play is very frustrating, but almost artistic at the same time, because he's got that one-handed backhand that looks so graceful. He's got a heavy, heavy topspin forehand, and he's got a nice serve too. He's got that lefty lean. He's got a huge torso lean, and he can really rip it. But I think that's his Achilles heel, just how, you know, wild he is.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where you don't see that many players go for the jumping one-hand backhand. Mm-hmm. And that's a shot that you see from him, and it's a spectacular shot to see, but it really shows how his style is based around going for those aggressive shots, which aren't necessarily the most consistent to go for. Looking back at what you said about him beating Nadal in 2017, I wonder if that was kind of the standard that we looked at these younger generations, that we looked for in the younger generation of players, if they could beat the big three. Because I'm assuming when he beat Nadal, people were writing about how he was, oh, he's a wonder kid, he's 18, he beat Nadal, this guy's going to be the next big thing. But I wonder if that almost sets up too high of expectations.
It could.
Because you see people like Kyrgios. Kyrgios beat all the big three, but I wonder if those expectations that were placed on him because people were like, oh, he's that level of player, if those impacted him negatively as he grew into the player that he would eventually become.
Yeah, that's a good point I never really thought of before. But the thing about Denis is I think he is capable of beating any player on tour right now. He has raw talent. If he is totally locked in, zoned in for the whole match, I can see him beating an Alcaraz. I can see him beating Medvedev. I can even see him beating Djokovic. Like, he is there, but I think it's just a mental thing. I think he makes too many unforced errors. He double faults way too many times per match, and maybe he's just not getting the right coaching.
That could be an impact. I wonder if we're going to see a trend in these players we're talking about of how much the mental game is a huge part of their sort of downward trajectory. Because I think if a player can develop successfully in their mentality as they get older, they're going to develop into a better player. But if their mentality stays in a sort of, I don't want to say a victim mindset, but a negative mindset about, oh, I should be doing better, I should be playing well, then that probably just sort of builds on itself and pushes them down further.
Yeah. So do you think a player, because he's very eccentric when he plays, do you think that signifies a weak mindset? Like if someone's yelling all the time, if they're clearly showing frustration on the court?
Well, I think the thing about showing frustration on the court, it can help someone to let emotions out sometimes, but you can't let those emotions get the best of you. And I think when you're being so open with them, some of the time the emotions do get the best of you. Even if you're just trying to, like when someone smashes a racket, there's a 1 in 5 chance that they smash the racket and then they come back and the smashing of the racket has calmed them down.
Yeah.
But 4 out of 5 times they smash the racket and then they're just even more pissed off after they've smashed the racket. But in general, I would say that it's better to try to keep the emotions inside when you're on the court.
Yeah, going off that, I believe for some people it does help, like a Nick Kyrgios. Like, I think he kind of feeds off that energy. But someone like Shapovalov, where it's clearly not working, like, he is one of the most loud players that I've seen on tour. And you kind of see, or you remember Bjorn Borg and Roger Federer, they had the most, you know, calm, composed, stoic playing style. But they weren't always like that. They tell stories where before, you know, Bjorn Borg was, he got kicked off the tour in Sweden. They're like, no, we can't have you. You're just not well behaved. And then from that moment on, he changed. And, you know, now he has that reputation for being calm and collective. Same thing with Roger Federer. Apparently he was a nuisance, right? He was
a junior player.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And then there was that turning point where he changed his attitude, changed his playing style. And I think that's what Dennis needs to do if he wants to be great. Unfortunately, he's kind of older right now. He's 24. I don't see him turning that around. Therefore, I think he's already peaked.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, I think people would argue with us and say, oh, he's still, what, ranked 20 in the top 30 players in the world. How could he be? Have already peaked. But you have to consider that there are people out there like Grigor Dimitrov, who is still ranked in like the top 20 or 30 players in the world. But you have to say that he's peaked, and no one really thinks Dimitrov is going to win a slam. Nobody thinks he's going to win a big tournament. Even though he's still a great player, same thing with Shapovalov. I don't really know how to pronounce it correctly.
Shapovalov. Yeah.
I think he's going to continue to be a good player, but I don't think he's going to continue that upward sort of momentum that people thought he had when he reached his peak in 2019.
Mm-hmm. So he's probably going to be one of those limbo players where, you know, he'll ride
you'll see him in tournaments.
Yeah,
yeah, you'll see him in tournaments and you'll see him do well, but you won't expect him to be in the semis, mm-hmm. in the final.
No. But I do see a couple upsets in the future. You know, like I said, I think he's capable of beating anyone on tour. So, like, yeah, you'll see some flashes of him, but he'll make a nice living playing tennis, but he will never be as good as he was.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to team.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on team? Because I think we differ on these.
For me, I think that team is in a situation where he really probably hit his peak in terms of talent in a similar time as Shapovalov, because he was in, what, 2 finals in 2018 and 2019 at Grand Slams, and then he eventually won in 2020. A little bit of an asterisk in my mind, but
okay.
He's a player where since then he hasn't really shown a massive amount of promise for the future. I mean, he's getting older, and you don't see him making good runs at tournaments anymore. I mean, he lost in the first round multiple times in a row in the past few tournaments. He made a decent run. Where was it? Estoril?
Yeah.
But then after that,
in the beginning of clay court.
Yeah, he beat, I think, Shelton. But then he lost in, I think, the quarters to maybe Halas. And it wasn't really, even though he was able to string together a couple of good matches, you didn't have that expectation that he was going to win the tournament.
Yeah, no, I remember that match because that was my bet of the week. I was taking Shelton, and of course he didn't win.
Classic.
But I don't know. I could see an Agassi-type story out of team where he had a few years of struggling, went down to the Challengers, played a couple of those. I don't think he's done. I wouldn't rule him out yet. I think he's got Do I think he has a slam in him? No, but I do think that he will reach a higher career ranking than he previously did.
Well,
and I think it's a slow climb.
I don't know. That's a tough thing to say because he was ranked like number 3 in the world at one point.
Yeah.
I could see him maybe make it under the top 20 again.
Okay, so maybe
I don't see him making the top 5 or top 10.
So you think he hit his highest peak, but do you think he has another small peak in him?
The thing about it is I think that every player on tour has the potential. Like all these top players that we're discussing have the potential to play at whatever level they did before, obviously. I mean, hypothetically,
I disagree.
At number 3, but I think he's older. I think he's has a lot of mental sort of obstructions that are difficult for any player to overcome. And I think that means that even if he goes back up in ranking, I don't think we're going to see him in the top 5 or 10.
Okay, maybe not in the top 5 or 10, but I do think compared to Denis Shapovalov, I think he's on an upward trajectory where team had a hard crash, right? And then he's slowly climbing his way up. We're seeing promising signs. He is doing a lot better. So I think he's more of like a U where he is coming up, whereas Denis wasn't so much of a crash, more of like a steady decline and then a plateau where like you're not really seeing – he didn't have as hard of a crash, so I don't think there's as much of a build-up for him, where I think team – has the potential for a bigger comeback because he fell so hard.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a situation where like you brought up Agassi. I mean, we both read his book. You talked about how he was in sort of a slump for a while. Why would you say that team has more of a potential of breaking out of a slump like that versus Shapovalov? Because a slump can affect both guys equally.
I think team's mentally tougher than Shapovalov. I think the way team plays, he's not a loose cannon, first of all. Like, he's very calculated in his shots. He has great fundamentals. He's not screaming his lungs out on court. He's a very professional attitude. And I think he knows, like, he's more mature than Shapovalov, and I think he knows what it takes to get back to where he was. He won a Grand Slam final. Shapovalov never has done that. And team actually came back 2 sets to love in a Grand Slam final. I think he has what it takes. And I think the fact that he's tasted that before, and his highs are high and his lows are low. And he knows what both feel like. And I think that he's the type of guy that is itching to get back to where he was. Whereas Denis, he's never tasted anywhere close to as much success as team has, so he doesn't have as much skin in the game. I think he's kind of just like, yeah, you know, I'm playing professional tennis, I'm making good money. But I think it's more about the actual status and like appreciation for the game and getting to where he wants to be. That's my opinion.
Okay. I mean, I think it's an interesting position. What do you think about the guy that team beat in the Grand Slam final, Zverev?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I don't know if his best tennis is behind him or if he's just getting started.
Yeah, he's definitely in a weird spot because he was coming up when the big three were in charge of tennis. And now he's still a top player. And you have to wonder whether the flashes you saw when he won the ATP Tour Finals in, 2018, and then again in 2021.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he has that ability to play at this high, the highest level, and he can be up there. But the question is, I think for him, whether the fact that he hasn't won a slam yet, whether that is going to drag him down.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be, he's going to be playing these tournaments against people like Medvedev and Alcaraz, who have already won a slam and they know what that feels like. And they're like, oh, I want another one.
Yeah.
And Zverev is like, I've been struggling for such a long time. And he, while he's found success, I think for a lot of top level players, the definition of success is if you win a slam or not.
I agree. I mean, that's how I define success, at least for tennis players. But yeah, I think he's going to be one of those limbo players where he is playing great tennis. You know, there's no doubt about it. He is, you know, consistently making it pretty far in these tournaments. But it's just a weird time where, yeah, like you said, he was coming up with the big three. The big three are kind of no longer a force to be reckoned with. But now you have a smaller big three coming up that's starting to win all these matches. So I think you'll see him continue to play great tennis, but I don't really see him making too much of a jump anymore. Like, he'll always be someone that when they get him in the draw, they're like, oh shoot, I gotta play Zverev. But I don't think he's, you know, gonna be
I don't think he's gonna inspire this same level of fear for someone as, oh, I have to play Sinner. I have to play Alcaraz. I have to play Medvedev. They're going to be like, okay, again, I'm going to have to play against Zverev. It's going to be a tough match, but I think he's beatable.
So in a way, I would argue that he has peaked then, at least when it comes to media attention and clout. Because remember when he was coming up and the big three were there, they were like, oh, next gen, Zverev. But I mean, that that's kind of his big claim to fame now, that he was part of the next gen that never really, you know, did
found,
anything.
Never found the slam success that people were hoping for.
Because,
I mean, it's hard to say. In my opinion, like, there is success in other ways. Like, you can, he had success in all these other tournaments, but he just didn't, he didn't break through at the slams like people were hoping for.
Yeah, well, what do you think about his calling out of Medvedev? I know we talked about it last week, but I've been reading a little more about it. Like, I didn't realize that he called him the most unfair player on tour, like in the world, he said, actually. And that he's always doing stuff like this. And, like, you know, it's a shame. I don't know. He kind of dug into him deep.
Well, I think Zverev was just mad that he lost, to be honest. I think every time someone feels they should have won a match and they lose, they're going to say something that is just out of anger and spite. I mean, it's like that press conference with Tsitsipas and Kyrgios, where Tsitsipas was like, oh, Kyrgios, he's such a bully on the court. And Kyrgios was like, what was I doing that was such a bully thing? Like, that guy was actually just trying to hit me with the ball. Like, he's the one that was being the bully. And I think Tsitsipas was just mad that he lost in that scenario. And I think Zverev was really just mad that he lost in this scenario. And it was mad that he lost to Medvedev because it's a player that he doesn't really like.
Yeah, but how do you think that makes him look as a player?
It's maybe
not a good look.
Maybe it's the idea of no media is bad media.
Yeah. No, he definitely likes being in the limelight. I can tell you that. Otherwise, he wouldn't be saying these outrageous comments.
Yeah. I mean, people want to have that attention on them a lot of the time. And if his only way of doing that is through making comments or stuff like that, I mean, it's just how it is.
Yeah, I like it, though. It keeps it interesting. You know, now we got this pretty good rivalry going on. And I love Medvedev's response. You know, like he said, if there's a problem, he's going to have to come find him in the locker room and he can talk to him about it then.
Yeah.
So that'll keep it interesting.
Exactly.
All right, let's get on to Berrettini. The only thing I'm going to say about Berrettini, because I can't really speak too much on him, is he probably blew his only chance at a Grand Slam. against Djokovic and Wimbledon. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and I think he hasn't just – he just hasn't been playing at the same level since then. I mean, I think we maybe aren't giving enough sort of credit to the mental toll that comes from being that close to, like, achieving your dream and then not achieving it.
Yeah.
Like, he's at Wimbledon, which is maybe the most iconic Grand Slam.
I think so.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're wearing all white. They got the grass court. It's pretty iconic. And he has a decent chance. I mean, it's his probably best service. I mean, he has every big server, I would say, has the best chance of winning at Wimbledon.
Yeah, the Italian hammer.
Exactly. And since that, he's had a lot of early exits. I mean, a lot of first and second round exits. He lost to Murray, I believe, at the Australian Open. And he played in a challenger this year in Phoenix and wasn't even able to win that. So that's really kind of showing the level drop. I mean, obviously all these players are professional players. Mm-hmm. It's a challenger, and this guy has been around the top 10 in the world. Mm-hmm. So you would expect him to kind of just blow through the field there, and just isn't how it turned out.
Yeah, he's on the older end too at 28. So
yeah,
sorry to say, I think he's peaked. Yeah, not really much. You pretty much hit it right there, but
yeah,
it's unfortunate because all right, these guys, yes, we know that they're not just gonna crash hard, but like I said before, he's gonna be one of those limbo players, right? You know, he'll go decent in these tournaments. He'll probably have some big wins eventually, but nothing slam worthy.
Yeah. And I think the only thing that could really save these guys is all of them is the fact that they have been successful in the past. And because of that success, they have the resources to break through again.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get a new coach, you can get entrances to big tournaments still. Because you're a big name, you're a big player. I feel like if they hadn't had the success, like if they hadn't had quite the same level of success as they have, because there are definitely players that break through to like the top 25 maybe, but don't get to like the top 10, mm-hmm. that kind of just fade really quickly. And I think with these guys, because they were playing in the biggest matches, they could still maybe come back because they have the resources available.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I think a big, you know, one thing that these players, maybe not Shapovalov, but at least teams, Zverev and Berrettini, have all in common is injury. It's kind of just bad luck, you know? Like, they have been set back. Other players really haven't, or at least they haven't had the severity of the injuries that they've had. So that's another thing that just takes a toll on you mentally. Like coming back from injury, it sucks. Because I'm sure when these guys are injured, you know, all they want to do is keep playing. And I'm sure they kind of push their bodies even more and unfortunately injure themselves more than they were before.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of injury, like I saw a name when I was looking at looking through the betting for this week. I saw the name Kyle Edmund.
Yeah.
And that's a guy that was a top 20 player, I believe, top 25, and I haven't seen his name in such a long time. And
I was gonna say
I was looking at it, and he had an injury that took him 21 months to come back from.
Jeez.
And it's just one of those things where, I mean, he had success, but I don't know if he can break through again because he wasn't a guy where you were seeing him making like deep runs at every big tournament. Like some of these guys were. So it's like, is he going to run out of resources to help him get back to that level?
Yeah, no. And I know Zverev, what's interesting about Zverev is when he was injured in Roland Garros last year, he was playing Nadal, and I don't know if he was winning or not, but I know he said that he was playing probably the best tennis of his life. He felt good in that match. And then, you know, he rolls over his ankle, boom, he's out for 7 months, 8 months. So it's sad to see it, but it's part of the game. It happens. Can't really harp on it.
Yeah, in summary, injuries suck. Alrighty, you ready to get into segments?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, let's do it. So, betting. I'm going Dusan Lajovic. No, Lajovic. Dusan Lajovic. Minus 170 over Kubler. I like him in this match because he's coming off hot off that Djokovic win, and I don't really know too much about Kubler. So I think
Australian, right?
Couldn't tell you. I just I've seen Dusan play in person. I'm kind of going off an emotional bet here, but
and we'll see. The momentum sort of.
Oh, I also want to shout us out. Last week we both hit our bets of the week.
Oh, let's yeah. Go. I was pretty hyped. I mean, betting for a 3-set match, I felt like was a pretty bold bet on my end, but
Mine was kind of a lock, so
yeah.
I don't care. We'll take it. We'll take the little wins where we can get them.
And I'm going for a second big bold bet this week. Mannarino plus 350 over Echeverry. Mm. The issue with this bet is that I think Mannarino is a player that is much stronger on hard court, and Echeverry made a run to, I believe, the final at ATP Houston. So
he came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he's a pretty strong clay court player, I'd say.
I'm pretty sure he beat Tommy Paul.
Exactly. So strong clay court player versus a guy that's a little bit older. But Mannarino's a wily player. I mean, he beat Shelton earlier this year, and I think that we could have a similar situation here. I mean, Echeverry's pretty young, and it's always tough to beat the wily old fox in a tournament. So,
I feel like Mannarino and strong in the same sentence just doesn't add up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's just a
fun guy to watch, though.
Yeah. He's just kind of a guy where it's like
he just
never
likes
know.
Being out there.
You never know. You never know what could happen with Mannarino.
Yeah, exactly. He's just happy to be playing. I feel like he never really wins, or no, he wins, but he never really expects to go far.
Yeah, exactly. And I also just think it's good value. I mean, plus 350 for I think a betting on a player that I think is actually higher rated, like higher ranked.
Yeah,
I think that's a relatively good bet.
Yeah. All right, let's get into match of the week. What was yours?
So my match of the week was the Munich final with Runa beating Van de Zandschulp. Kind of tough name to pronounce, but he won 6-4, 1-6, and then in the last set, he came back from being down 5-2, and his opponent had 2 match points, and then Runa came back and won 7-6 in the tiebreak. So pretty intense match, and kind of some drama with it that I'll get into in the what's new for this week.
Yeah, definitely. So my match of the week was Tsitsipas over Musetti, 6-4, 5-7, 6-3. I like this match because I love the heavy hitting in here at the topspin. And then there's another point that I thought was pretty interesting where Musetti rips one at Tsitsipas. And to me, it looked like he got the volley off, which I think he also thought he did too. But the umpire called it a double hit. And so he lost that point. Yeah, I know. It was kind of a weird, like, right at his body. Like, maybe I didn't really get a good camera angle from what I saw, he might have gotten it off. Questionable. But anyway, that was a set point for Tsitsipas. And then game point. And then Musetti ended up actually winning that game and then winning the set to force it to a third. But ended up falling ultimately. But great match overall.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
What do you think about these Italian players? I feel like are playing pretty well recently. Like other than Berrettini, obviously.
Yeah.
Musetti and Sonego, I think, have been playing very well recently, which is kind of out of nowhere considering like they aren't really like top players, but. I mean, I've been seeing their names a lot at tournaments in at least like the quarterfinals, making like pretty solid runs.
I think these young guys are hungry. I think they sense an opportunity. You know, there's nothing established and they're trying to get up there. Like Berrettini is no longer top Italian. Like when you hear top Italian, I used to think Berrettini, now I'm Sinner. And then,
Well, yeah.
yeah, obviously. But then, like you said, those young guys, they're coming up. Musetti, Sonigo. I would even put them ahead of Berrettini.
I don't know how young they are, but like they definitely are in a better place in terms of momentum than he is. But yeah, you ready to get into the what's new?
Yeah, let's see. What is new? All right, Djokovic withdraws from Madrid. So I thought this was interesting because this that was th since Madrid's inception, this will be the first time that none of the big three will be playing in it.
Jeez.
So we will get a nice foreshadow of what the future has to hold without the big three. But it also is kind of an iffy statement going into Roland Garros. Like, is Djokovic going to be ready to go by then? Is his elbow going to be fine? We don't know. Gonna have to stay tuned. Hopefully, this is good for him to just rest up and then come in to Roland Garros ready to play. Hopefully, it's not a lingering thing. But yeah, I mean, Nadal's expected. I didn't expect him to play, but Djokovic, wow, that kind of caught my attention.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be very interesting actually to see. I mean, if both of those guys aren't playing, that would be one of the first Grand Slams in a long time that hasn't had any of the big three in it.
Yeah.
Going,
Jeez.
if you went into Roland Garros and there was no Djokovic, no Nadal, it's literally it would be so wide open of a tournament. I also feel like that would just sway the odds so heavily towards Alcaraz winning.
Yeah. All
But
right, so Musetti's 21 and Sonego's 27. Just looked it up.
okay.
But
So
Sonego
Musetti's
looks so
pretty young.
young, doesn't he? Yeah. I don't
Both,
know.
I
It's
mean,
that Italian skin, man. These
yeah.
jeans, they don't
Yeah,
age.
exactly.
Just
Exactly.
olive oil and
Yeah.
sun. All right.
Exactly. Yeah,
What's
so
new for you?
my what's new was, as I mentioned in my match of the week, Rune actually got accused of faking an injury in his match in the final.
Oh my God.
But to me, I think the accusations kind of seem a little unfounded. I mean, sometimes it looks like a guy's hurt, sometimes it looks like a guy's down and out. I mean, if you watched the match with Alcaraz and Sinner in Miami, it looked like Alcaraz was completely down and out, and it turned out it was just a cramp. And once he got some fluids in him, all of a sudden he was playing at a high level again. I think sometimes a player gets hurt and they're just able to battle through it. And if that's how it goes, I mean, that's how it goes. Someone, you can't say, oh, he was faking an injury because he was able to battle through it. I think instead you should actually applaud the fact that he was able to work through this injury and still get the win.
Yeah, but I can see the other end where this is kind of his way of saying, but maybe if a player was to fake an injury, then the goal is to kind of make the other player think that they can take their foot off the gas, maybe take it easy, and then it's kind of like hustling someone. So like if you're playing pool and you're shooting like garbage, and then you're like, hey, let's bet on this next match, and then guy's like, yeah, let's do it, and then you just come out and ball out, then the other player thinks like that he got hustled. And I can see where he's coming from, because if I'm playing against someone and they're injured, then I'm almost gonna kind of play down to that level. Like I'm not gonna really give it my all, because like what am I gonna enforce this on this injured player? I kind of agree with the whole faking injury thing. Like I don't know if I
I
It's
actually
also
kind
Runa. Runa's kind of an interesting player.
Yeah, I kind of disagree, to be honest. I think that most players on the tour, if they saw someone was injured, they'd go, "Okay, I'm going to try to exploit that injury to the max."
To a certain extent. Like, you've seen players try to play out matches where, say, like they
Yeah, I
can't
mean,
even run.
did you see Cilic versus Federer in
Yeah.
2017 in the Wimbledon final? Cilic got injured, I think, in the second set. And in the third set, he just wanted to play out the match for the audience's sake.
Yeah.
And it was like essentially over at that point. But I think you can tell when someone still has gas in the tank
So would you ever
versus
fake an injury?
fake an injury
All
in.
right, faking is a strong word. I would say say you're playing, right? Your elbow's kind of hurting. It's a little like you're feeling those vibrations. You're definitely not going to quit, but you're feeling it. Would you show like facial expressions? Would you be moping around? Would you like wring out your arm, all that stuff? Or is, do you think you're better off just ignoring that? You know what I mean?
I think if you're not going to, if you're not going to resign the match, mm-hmm. then I think there's no point in showing that you're injured.
Yeah. All right, and that's the episode. Let us know what you guys think. Are these players on the decline? Do they have a second peak in them? Let us know. Thanks for tuning in. All right, and that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.